Hello, everyone, and I am so excited for us to get started today with the first class for the Concierge Crash Course. I'm so excited that you have decided to join me. And I just wanted to say that I know that in the industry, sometimes things can seem a little difficult, but there are ways to work together, and that's what I'm here to help you with so that you can build the business that you really want to build and have a life and business that not just energizes you, but that you love and wake up every morning ready to tackle. So this week's class is, I'm going to be admit, it's going to probably be a little dry and probably a little boring, but this is the first steps of setting up your business and setting up the right way. It's all extremely valuable information, and I'm going to share some resources with you. But it's not like the love and fun. It's kind of like when you build a house and, you know, the paint and new fixtures and redoing your kitchen, that's all the fun stuff. So we're going to get to that stuff later. But when you first buy a house, you have to go through all the evaluations and the inspections and all that, and that's not as much fun. But it's necessary nonetheless. And that's what we're going to tackle today so that you have a great footing for what you're about to do, or whether you're looking to expand or you're first starting out, this is going to give you those first steps that are really necessary. All right, so we're going to deal with the elephant in the room known as insurance. Insurance for our industry has been difficult, to say the least. We do not have a specified coding for our industry. There are industry codes for pretty much anything else out there in the world that you want to be, except there is not one for us. Years ago, we had a code that they were using for us, but it did not really fit what it was a personal concierge typically does. And the code is the NAICS code. So typically, if you are an agent of some sort, even pet sitters, they all have their own specific code, but there has not been one designated for our industry yet. We are collectively trying to change that. We've been trying to change that for 10 years, and we're not getting anywhere just yet with it. So when you are trying to get insurance for your business, you'll need to know a lot of information in the beginning when you go out to speak with representatives. What I recommend is that you have an insurance broker who can investigate multiple insurance carriers at the same time instead of you going out individually, one-on-one, interviewing different insurance companies. It'll save you a lot of valuable time, and that's what brokers are out there for. They're out there to do the legwork for you. So that's the first thing. I encourage everyone to have a broker and to have them investigate what it is that you specifically need for your specific business. And the reason I say that is that there are people who will offer a variety of services. Some people offer services in people's homes. Some only offer services online. Other people offer services where they involve pet care. Some concierge businesses out there will actually also include babysitting and child care. So it's really important to know up front what it is that you want to offer and what it is that you will not offer. This way, when you have those conversations with the broker, you can ask them very specific questions that will help them determine and understand what your risk and liabilities might look like. So, for example, when I started my business, I did not want to include any type of child care whatsoever. One, because I'm a mom of four. I have enough children to look after. I do not want to look after somebody else's children. There are enough nanny services out there in the world that can handle that. As a concierge, I can partner with a nanny service if I have a client who needs that type of service. So later on in our class, we'll be discussing how you can partner with other industries and other service providers so that you are still the overall leader for your clients' lives, but you don't necessarily have to do that specific work. So again, you're going to want to determine whether or not some of these things I mentioned to you are things that you want to personally offer as a service to your personal client. One of them to consider is the babysitting. Another service is companion visits and visiting with elderly. Another is driving, and whether you are going to be driving your client to and from appointments. Whether you will drive your clients to and from appointments in your own vehicle or in their vehicle. So those are mainly the things that you're going to have to negotiate, decide on, and discuss with the insurance broker. I cannot give you any legal information because every state is governed under their own rules and regulations. So, for example, I can tell you typically within the area that I live in and the surrounding areas, we are not allowed to drive people for pay. So if I had a client who said, can you drive me to the train station for my business trip, I cannot drive them unless I am covered a certain way. If I am taking money from them, then I am required to have a livery license, which is a taxi license. Or we need to carry commercial driver's insurance. So in addition to your business insurance, you want to also be sure that your driver's insurance will also cover you. And again, these are conversations you should have with your specific broker because they'll be able to help determine based on the type of coverage that you carry and the amount of coverage that you carry, what will cover you and not cover you if there was some type of course of action called upon you. So in order to drive people, a lot of people have decided to get away from that as a service that they provide because the insurance can become very, very costly. However, in some states, it's mandatory anyway. That's why it will depend on the state that you're in, what type of insurance and what type of policy you have. So you're going to have your business insurance. You'll, of course, make sure that you have your driver's insurance. And you will also consider adding an umbrella policy on your own personal insurance, just as a backup. It's just another way to protect yourself, your family, and your assets, as well as your business assets, in the event that there was some type of legal recourse called against you. Some of the providers that I know that have provided coverage for people in our industry are Travelers, Liberty Mutual, Scottsdale, Selective, and Hiscox. If that's pronounced properly, it's spelled H-I-S as in Sam, C as in cat, O-X. those are insurance carriers that I know of personally that have covered people within our industry. That being said, some will carry you and then drop you for no necessary reason. The problem being, again, because of the types of services that typically a personal concierge offers, they just are not sure what it is that we do. They don't know how to classify us properly with the proper NICS and AICS code. And they're not sure what their risk is. So many will offer, many won't offer, and then you have some that will offer it. You'll be covered under them for a year or two, and then they will decide that they will no longer cover you. A personal story of mine is I had an insurance carrier for a couple years. I had no problems with them, and they must have read something on my website that to them was a red flag. And they decided to drop me. They don't, or they're not required to tell me why. But when I spoke with my broker, who had to then go out and find a new carrier for me, one of the things that we took on this past year is because I offer companion visits with seniors. So we will sit with seniors in their home, clean for them, decorate for them, you know, go grocery shopping for them, sit with them, and we typically will update their families. But being covered for insurance, we were having some difficulties because that was one of the core services that my personal business offered. So in order to properly cover myself, my broker had me pick up an additional abuse policy so that it covers me because I am in a home with other people. So again, I know it sounds like this big gray area, and it kind of is, and that's why you have to take the time to work this out with a broker. And that's, again, that's what their job is. Their job is to find you the best coverage that will suit your specific needs. Another thing that I wanted to bring up is bonding. So many people will talk about being insured and bonded. I, too, have a bond. However, when I started my business, it was just me, and everybody knows my story. When I started my business, it was just me, and I wanted to go out there and save the world by the services that we offered. And the first insurance broker that I worked with got a policy for me, and he also told me that I needed to be bonded. I needed to be insured and bonded. So I did what he told me to do, and I paid for a insurance policy for the year as well as a bond for the year. And I don't remember offhand what the amount of coverage was for the bond, but I'll just say it was maybe $50,000 for the bond. And within a month or two after I started doing my own research and doing some further investigation, what I realized was that a bond would do nothing for me. It's really just a big fancy word that has, in reality, become a marketing tool for a lot of businesses. A bond only covers, in our industry, what a bond covers is if you have an employee who goes into somebody's home and they are accused of theft. And then when you go to court or you have charges filed against that person, that is when a bond kicks into place. I think we have this elusive idea that it covers for something else, but in reality, that is what a bond covers you for. There are other types of bonds that also cover you for very, very large contracts. So, for example, people who are in maybe a construction company or do large events, people would need to have a bond. And what that bond says is it's almost like a promissory note. It's a note that tells, you know, my company is contracting with company ABC, and I am promising to deliver XYZ services over the next several months in this time frame in this manner. And that's a different type of bond. That is a bond that basically states that you are protecting and ensuring to this other company that you've contracted with that you're going to do what you say you're going to do, when you say you're going to do it, and in a manner that you have agreed upon. So in that case, that type of bond comes into play when you obtain contracts with larger companies. So we already talked about the legality of driving as well. So many of us in our industry, it's a request that a lot of people have. Can you drive me to this? Can you drive me to that? And it will depend on where you are and the type of coverage that you have, whether you can or cannot do that. So again, just make sure that you're asking the proper questions when you're interviewing and going through the process with your insurance broker. Have a list of questions for them that you can ask them specifically. So when I spoke with my broker in the beginning, I created scenarios for him. And I said, okay, let's say, for example, I am in client Jane's house putting laundry away and waiting for the painter and doing some filing for client Jane and putting away groceries for client Jane. And in that time, I accidentally bump her $5,000 antique vase and it shatters on the floor. Will I be covered for that? Another question I would ask is, I'm visiting, you know, client John, and while visiting client John, his cat gets out of the house and is never found. Am I covered for that? Another question I asked was, if I am picking up client Michael's $4,000 suit from the cleaners and I am driving it back to his home, and I am in a car accident and my car catches on fire and the suit goes up in flames, am I covered for that? So these are some of the types of scenarios and so forth that I just wanted to be sure, because everybody says, oh, sure, you're covered. But then when it comes down to it, are you truly covered? Because you don't only want to cover and protect yourself, but you're also doing this to protect and cover the clients that you're working with as well. It's covering their assets. It's covering their property, and it gives them peace of mind as well. So coming up with some type of drafted questionnaire when you're doing your interviewing process is a great way to be able to compare apples to apples, because a lot of people will give you policies that are, you know, two dozen pages long with all this legal jargon in it that you can't even decipher, and you really need to be able to know whether the policy that this insurance carrier is offering you and this person, if they're actually equal or not. And the only way to do that is to be able to clearly identify some of the types of questions and scenarios and situations that you could potentially find yourself in to make sure that the coverage would be equal across the board. Other things to consider when you are investigating insurance as well as bonding is whether you're going to have employees or independent contractors. An employee is somebody who works for you and you're required to take out taxes. That's the easiest way to say it. However, there's much more involved in what designates an employee versus an independent contractor. An employee is also someone who has to report to you in a manner that you tell them to, and that they perform their tasks and jobs in a way that you tell them that they need to. So if there's any types of policies and procedures that you carry throughout your business structure, and you are requiring people to adhere to those standards, then they are considered an employee. If you tell them when to show up for a job, when to clock in, when to clock out, how to dress, how to perform, they are considered an employee, and you would be required to treat them as an employee, which requires, again, giving them a paycheck, taking out taxes, paying a portion of their percentage of taxes that you're required to pay, the whole payroll process. If you're working, however, with an independent contractor, those people are people that work for you, and they pick and choose when they work, how they work, whether they take on a job or not, and how they perform. So there are clear indications, and you can even go to the IRS's website, and there's lots of information out there that will help you determine when you begin to bring in team members, whether those people are independent contractors or if they are considered employees. And then you're going to make sure to treat them as such. That is the information that you're also going to need when you are doing your research for your insurance policies and your proper coverage. Some cover employees. If you have employees, you typically are required to also have workers' compensation insurance as well. One of the things that I encourage everyone to have in place when you're starting out your business is to have what is called an advisory board. And your advisory board is basically, if you think of a larger corporation and the way that they function, they have a board. So they have people on the board that helps them, the CEO of the business, make decisions that would be for the best of the actual business entity. So the people you want to have on your advisory board, number one, is a lawyer, because you're always going to want to have somebody in your pocket who you have a relationship with, whom you can work with, whom you trust, whom has your best interest at heart, and is there for you. It's always best to have someone readily available to you who you already know, like, and trust than to get into some type of predicament and not have somebody. So number one is to have a lawyer in your advisory board. Number two is to have a banker. I like to encourage people, especially if you're in a smaller town, to have one of those bankers be somebody who is affiliated with one of your smaller branches or smaller local towns, especially if you are working within your business locally. If you're working globally, things are a little bit different, but it's always best to have somebody who knows the area that you're in, because later on they'll become a center of influence for you anyway, because bankers generally know a lot of people. But because this way, if you need to take out money to expand your business, or you're looking for some type of small loan, or you want to know the best account to have, or how much money you want to have in reserve, how much money you want to have up front for your capital and your startup costs, having somebody, again, who is local that you can easily have a conversation with is much better than having someone that you call up the 1-800 number of from your, you know, your big ABC bank carrier that you use. The other person you want to have on your advisory board, again, is your insurance broker. So, for example, when I started my business and it was just me and I had conversations with my broker, it was, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to offer, this is what I'm not going to offer, I need coverage. Then when I wanted to expand my services, I said, okay, so I'm considering adding in these services, what do we need to do to be covered? I'm bringing in a team. What do I need to be covered, and what do I need to have my team be covered? So that's why it's really important to have a really great working relationship with your insurance broker. They need to become more than just your broker. They're going to be part of your advisory board. So again, you know, if you're presented with an opportunity that might be, you know, doing subcontract work or contracting out with another local service provider or another local vendor, you want to be sure that all your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed, and having your insurance broker on your advisory board will help make that process a lot easier. Then, of course, you always want to have a mentor, somebody who is, as we like to say, who is up the ladder a little for you. They don't have to be 30 years up the ladder. They can just be 5 or 10 years up the ladder. But having somebody who is a mentor can help lighten and make smaller the gap from where you are now to where you want to be, because they've already been through it. Someone else to have on your advisory board are other fellow business owners, whoever your top two or three closest business owner entrepreneurial friends will be. Because those will be people that in the long term, you're always going to want to have people that you can go to bounce ideas off of. Being an entrepreneur can be extremely lonely when you are the only one, even when you have a team. So I have a big team now. I just brought on my 8th team member officially on Friday. And even having this big team, you know, my team works remotely. They don't work out of my home office. So it still becomes very lonely. And also, I'm not filling my team in on all the back end part of the business because I am the CEO of the business. So, but these are things that I might want to have conversations with other people who are running businesses that I can have those conversations with and say, what do you think about doing this? What do you think about doing that? Or if you want to expand into other areas, or just having somebody to have those conversations with. One of the greatest things when I first started my business was becoming friends with another concierge. And her and I, we live close to one another. We're only about 25 minutes apart. And we both work in our own quote-unquote areas and districts, so to speak. And we can refer business back and forth. But even better than that is we created this long-lasting friendship. And I called her... I dubbed her my non-partner partner of Task Complete, and then she is I'm her non-partner partner. So whenever there are resources that come up, we can exchange them with each other. Being part of associations, you can do that. When, you know, I wanted to expand in a specific area, I went to her and asked her feedback. When she wanted to expand in something, she came to me for feedback. When we wanted to raise our rates, you know, since we're sort of in the same area, we kind of have a general idea of what the market will bear. So when I raised my rates, I told her to raise her rates because I knew that the market would bear that price. So having other business owners that you can count on for reliable information and input. The key to that, though, is to try to find somebody who is up the ladder again from you, kind of like with your mentors. It should be somebody up the ladder. You don't want to be looking for advice going side to side. And you definitely don't want to be getting advice from people when you look down below. You need to be looking for advice and information from above. It doesn't mean you need to take that information. You always have to go with what your gut tells you and your intuition. But at the same time, you don't want to be going side to side because those people really aren't any further along the path than you necessarily are. Next, I want to talk about getting started and getting subcontracts. And the reason why I actually wasn't going to bring this topic into the class until much later, but I thought it was would be more valuable to you in the beginning than later. Because in the beginning, as you're setting up your business and you're trying to figure out who your ideal clients are going to be, where you're going to find your ideal clients, how you're going to market to them, what type of marketing materials get their interest, what marketing materials don't get their interest, that's going to be the information that we talk about moving forward. But in the beginning, one of the greatest things you need to do is get clients and get cash, because an influx of cash keeps you positive. When you start out in business and you put your flyers out and your business cards out and you go networking and you're knocking on doors and you're doing all the things that you think would bring clients right away, don't be deterred if it doesn't happen right away. It typically does not, because you need to build a name for yourself in your area as well as in your industry. There are definitely times when fluke things will happen and somebody out of the blue will call you and offer you, you know, to partner with them, and that's great. But that's typically not how it works. This is a business that needs to start from the ground up. So I want you to not be discouraged if the work doesn't come to you right away. However, I do want you to focus mainly on getting out of the house and speaking to everybody, their mother, their brother, their sister, and all their divorced family members in the world, and talk to them to let them know about you, your brand new business, and all the great work that you can do for your clients. Because that's the only way that you're going to get clients. You have to not be hiding behind your computer. You have to not be trying to find clients on social media, worrying about blogs and websites and big PR campaigns and all that other stuff that we will get into. Right now, the fastest path to new clients is them getting to shake your hand and getting to meet you. A lot of people get distracted by all the cool gadgets and who's in hoffers out there that we all are told in the beginning that we need. We all need a video. We all need this. We all need that. We all need a blog. We all need a website. We all need SEO. And a lot of that is completely, absolutely true, but none of that is going to bring you clients as fast as a face-to-face handshake will get you clients. All that other stuff will come, but in order to fund that stuff, you're going to need to have clients. In order to get testimonials, you're going to need to have clients. So please do this for yourself and make sure that you are trying to connect with and meet as many people as possible on a daily basis and exchanging business cards and learning about them and letting them learn about you and what it is that you do. Drop business cards on counters wherever you walk, drop business cards at the gym, drop business cards at the bank, just nonchalantly drop business cards all over the place, especially if they're in areas where you might have ideal clients at the in the same area. But one of the easier ways, and I don't want to say easier, I'm going to take that back. It's not the easier ways, but one other additional revenue stream that you can bring on while you're building your business is by having people feed clients to you instead of you going out and finding clients. This does not take away from the work that you should be doing each and every day. You should be out of your house a minimum of 2 hours each and every day connecting with people to try to find clients. But ways that you can get clients brought to you is through subcontracts. So I want to give you a few resources right now for other people who typically will subcontract out to people in the concierge industry. And this is why I needed to start this class with insurance, because many of these will not bring you on as a subcontractor unless you have an insurance policy in place. Because if they use you and something happens and you're not insured, then it only comes down on them and they're just protecting themselves. So some of the places that you can get subcontracts with are corporate housing companies. There's a corporate housing company out there by the name of Oasis. It's Oasis Corporate Housing. I've done subcontract work for them for probably over 2 years now. And the way subcontract work works is they will call on you when they have a need in your specific area. So the first person that ever reached out to me was somebody from Oasis. And the way it worked was she reached out to me. She found me online. So, yes, that's why you do need to have a website, because people will Google search for you. She found me online and then found me through my LinkedIn profile and called me and asked me if I served a specific area. The specific area that she needed help in was a solid hour and 10 minutes from me, and it was not a nice drive. It was like a complicated, through horrific traffic type of drive. It would have not been worth my time. So at the time, I knew of a person that was in that area that she needed help, so I connected her with that person directly. So you would think that I gave work away. However, that set me up with a relationship with the company. So then I reached back out to her a few weeks later and said, hey, do you remember me? You called upon me for such and such area, and I referred you to so-and-so. I hope that worked out. Great. I'm glad it worked out. And then mentioned the areas in which I am closely related and areas in which they might have needs and services for. So then I just updated her to the specific areas that I served. And then when she needed somebody in this area, I was the person she then directly contacted. Now sometimes when she's in a pinch, you know, she can reach out to me and I might have to do something that's an hour away. But that's how we started the relationship. So that is a company you want to look up. You'll want to Google them and you'll want to see what they're all about and see about trying to connect with them and see, let them know what you are doing, what location you're in, and that if they ever have a need in your area, that you're there and you would love to help support them. The corporate housing arena is becoming bigger and bigger, so there are other places out there. What I did, actually, is when I had this great, you know, gig with Oasis, I thought, well, they can't be the only company out there that does this. So I started Googling other companies that did similar work. That process can be a little time-consuming and be daunting, but it's still can be worth your time if you put maybe an hour a week aside to do some research and find other companies that do similar work. Other companies that I have personally worked with are, aside from Oasis, are also SwitchPlace is another corporate relocation company, and Travelers Haven is another one. Another resource is a much larger company called Dwellworks, and they do actual corporate relocations, and they do very specific, more engaged contracts. So to give you a better understanding from one to the other, Oasis, SwitchPlace, and Travelers Haven, typically you are hired to go into an apartment. Let's say they have a CEO coming in from out of town who's being relocated for a three-month job gig, or 6 months or 9 months. It always varies. It's typically 3 months or longer. And they are setting up a CEO or employee of some sort in a apartment complex of some kind. And then that person will come into town and they'll be staying at that apartment. Your job as the concierge who is subcontracting for the relocation company is you will go in and you will typically wait for the cable guy and do a thorough inspection of the apartment. Now, each of these companies that I mentioned, they all work differently, they all compensate differently, and they all have their own different policies that you need to adhere to in regards to how you communicate with them, how you bill them, and how you get paid. In addition to that, they all have their own guidelines for what you need to assess and evaluate when you're doing the apartment walkthrough. So some of these companies will give you a several-page checklist that says everything from running the dishwasher to making sure that the seams in the lampshades are in a different, you know, not facing out, that they're facing the wall. They have very specific checklists. And your job as the concierge is you are their eyes and ears and on-the-ground personnel that is making sure that their business is represented in the best way imaginable for the people who are then being relocated to that specific apartment unit for their reload for the time being. Dwellworks, on the other hand, is a physical relocation company that does similar things, but their projects are longer term. So, for example, when I was subcontracting with Dwellworks, they have contracts with larger companies, much larger companies. We're talking the Googles and the Exxons and the Picos of the world. They have contracts with much larger companies. And the way they utilize my services was that they would assign a transferee to me. So let's say Jane Doe. So Jane Doe is coming from Switzerland to, we'll just say New York City. So this person's coming from Switzerland to New York City. Now, it would only be somebody who's in my general area. I'm not in New York City, but I'm just using that to make it clearly identifiable. So this person is coming in from Switzerland to New York City. She is married. She has three children. She is being relocated for 1 year. She is looking for a home that has three bedrooms and 2.5 bathrooms and is within 30 minutes drive from her office that she's now going to have to commute to with XYZ company, whatever company this is that is relocating her. And your job would then be to help her find housing within the budget that they've allotted and do school searches and local searches. And it's a much more involved process, and I could be on the phone for an hour explaining the process to you. but they DwellWorks provide you with training to do that type of relocation. This really comes into play when you live closer to bigger cities or you are only 30 minutes suburban to a larger feeder city that has bigger corporations in it. If you're in a little tiny small town, this likely will not be a good resource for you. But if you're in a larger town, it's definitely a good resource for you. I did work with them for about a year and a half. Since then, however, because I wanted to be more focused on building my own business, I decided to let them go as a subcontract. So I no longer take assignments from them. At any point, if I wish to start back up with them, I can easily pick up the phone, call them, and tell them to put me back in their roster again. But where I was in my business, I no longer wanted to take time from me building my business and my brand to provide to them because their assignments are, they are not as in and out as the apartment walkthroughs are. The apartment walkthroughs are typically a 2-hour to 4-hour gig. You're in, you're out, you do what you got to do, you forward all the paperwork, you make sure that they're represented in a good light. They get paid whatever they get paid, you get paid what you've billed them, and you go on to the next job. With DwellWorks, theirs can be a longer process. Theirs can be 2 days, 3 days worth of work and interacting with their relocations and transferees and things can definitely get more muddled. And it was starting to impact my day in a way that I was not willing to take on anymore. It just became a little more complicated for me. There are people in our industry who love working with them because they've got it down to a system, they've got it down to a science, they love having clients come in that they can help them with their relocation. So that will be a personal decision for you whether or not that's something you would want to take on. One of the other things you can look for are some of the bigger, larger concierge companies that offer services globally. And you can easily just do a Google search of them because these are companies, I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head. One concierge is one that is a much more global. They have a global reach. And they obviously do not have employees across the globe. So they will typically subcontract out work to us smaller business entities in specific areas. So they basically have a bunch of us smaller businesses on a Rolodex. So you might want to search corporate concierge companies, global concierge companies, and see if they are taking on new subcontracts, because then it's just another added potential source of revenue for you. None of these could yield you anything, but some of them could yield you. I've done subcontracts where I yielded $2,000-$3,000 a month from a subcontract. And then there were other ones that I had that I had to go through hoops to provide them with a bunch of information in my insurance policy and my bond and so forth. And after 9 months, they never used me for anything. So it didn't yield anything. But again, there if it does work, it works out well because this is extra side cash that can come in that'll just support your bottom line. So I hope that that information is helpful to you. And that's going to basically bring us to the close of this week's class. I went through a lot of information. It's a lot of really heady, you know, ugly stuff, so to speak. And then our next class, again, I decided to switch things around a little bit. I had my classes lined up one way, but I decided to try to switch things around a little bit to try to help you get clients faster. So the next class we're going to do is called The Fastest Path to Cash, and we're going to go into the top 4 ways to get clients faster. because sometimes it can take, you know, clients 6-12 months to decide to hire you. But these top four ways that I share with you next week will be the ways in which I have gotten business faster. And that is about it. I just want to make sure that I have everything from all of my notes. We discussed insurance, going with a broker and not just an individual insurance company. We talked about bonds, why you might need a bond and why you might not need a bond. Many of the subcontract companies, the larger companies, they will require you to have a bond even if you do not have employees and even if it's only you, and that's because they're required to have a bond. It's kind of like, you know, the trickle-down effect. They need to have it, so they're going to make sure you have it, even though it doesn't do anything. That's just their policy. So if you want to have a subcontract with them, you're just going to be required to have that. We also talked about the legality of driving and to make sure that you have all those considerations in place. We discussed having employees versus having independent contractors. Now, there's much more involved when it comes to that, but for the beginning of your business, the information that you have now is plenty to get you started with. We talked about what an advisory board is, why you should have one, and then I tried to wrap it up for you to help you bring in some cash, and that was talking about subcontract. And again, some of those companies are Oasis, Switch Place, Traveler's Haven, One Concierge, and the larger relocation company who is global is Dwellworks. So my hope for you this week is that you'll be able to take this information and at least start thinking where you're planning on going for the next 6 months of your business, where you're planning on going for the next year of your business, and then start thinking 5 years out. This way you, not that you have to start thinking about everything you need to have in place for 5 years out, but if you know you want to have a team, if you know you want to have a team of five, whether or not they're going to be independent contractors or employees, you can at least start compiling the questions that pop up into your head as you're moving along, and as you pick up bits of information along the way, you'll already have it. So then when you are 2 years in, 3 years in, 5 years in, you'll already be ahead of the curve and won't have to go back. And that is going to wrap it up for our class today. So I hope everyone gained some valuable information from what we talked about today. And if there is anything else that you are not clear with, you'll want to take note and have a separate section of your notebook somewhere. Hopefully you have a notebook, and create a separate section of your notebook that literally you can mark it questions, and then start jotting down your questions there. So when we do have the live Q&A questions, you won't forget the questions that you thought about during class one or class two or class three. You'll already have them listed, and then this way we can try to get to as many as possible during the live Q&A calls. And that is going to wrap it up, and I hope you have a great day and a great week, and I really look forward to next week's class, The Fastest Path to Cash. All right now, bye-bye.